letter is very appropriate for this week because it's talking about our time. VBS, this coming week, it's made it's taken away a lot of our time that we would consider to be our personal time whenever we've got to dedicate it to VBS going on. So we're going to talk about time and the value of time this morning. So somebody can start off and read the first paragraph. A little bit of a long one, so make sure you're comfortable with reading if you want to take that one.
Yes, a period of sexual temptation is an excellent time for working in a subordinate attack on the patient's prettiness. It may even be the main attack as long as he thinks it's the subordinate one. But here, as in everything else, the wave must be prepared for your moral assault by darkening his intellect. Men are not angered by mere misfortune, but by misfortune conceived as injury. And the sense of injury depends on the feeling that a legitimate claim has been denied. The more claims on life, therefore, that your patient can be induced to make, the more often he will feel injured and, as a result, ill-tempered. Now you will have noticed that nothing throws him into a passion so easily as to find a tract of time which he reckoned on having at his own disposal unexpectedly taken from him. It is the unexpected visitor, when he looked forward to a quiet evening, or the friend's talkative wife turning up when he looked forward at a what? With the friend, throws him out of gear. Now he is not yet so uncharitable or slothful that these small demands on his courtesy are in themselves too much for it. They anger him because he regards his time as his own and feels that it is being stolen. You must therefore zealously guard in his mind the curious assumption, my time is my own. Let him have the feeling that he starts each day as the lawful possessor of 24 hours. Let him feel as grievous tax that portion of this property which he has to make over to his employers, and as a generous donation that further portion which he allows to religious duties. But what he must never be permitted to doubt is that the total from which these deductions have been made was in some mysterious sense his own personal birthright.
Okay. If you're new to our class, we're going through the Screwtape Letters written by C.S. Lewis, authors of Chronicles of Narnia. And this is letters from one demon to another in talking about how to deal with the human. So, he starts off and he talks about attacking people when they feel like they've got some kind of an injury, whenever they feel like a legitimate claim has been denied. And so this is something that we usually feel strongly about. Sometimes we feel like there's things that we have a right to and they're being denied. And sometimes it's legitimate. If you have been working all week, and your employer says, well, you know, we didn't get the pay process this week, so sorry, you know, we'll catch you next week and pay you. Then you feel, rightfully so, like you've got a legitimate injury there. Like somebody owes you something that hasn't been paid to you. But sometimes we feel like an injury's occurred, if there's some kind of a misfortune, when there's really not. For example, there's a big difference that we look at between an accident and somebody doing something to us deliberately. If your vehicle's involved in an accident, we react quite differently if, you know, it was just, you know, a parking lot incident or something and it's nobody's fault, than if we felt like somebody got in there and deliberately rammed our car on purpose. We would react very differently to those two situations. You know, in the first case, you've got a very cooperative attitude. In the second case, you've got a very combative attitude, depending on whether you feel like somebody intended to do something against you. Okay? And he uses this concept in dealing with the idea of time, that our time is our own. And so Get it. Okay. So when he's talking about time, he says a lot of times we feel like we've got this. You got to speak up. My attention. I'm in the zone. You know. So a lot of times there's a block of time that we've got saved out. You know, maybe there's one night a week that you've got free and you don't have anything going on. And so you get all mentally prepared to come in and spend your evening in whatever way that you like to spend your relaxing evenings. And then you find out something's going on. You know, you come home and you find out, you know, the dog's sick or the cat's sick. You got to take it to the vet. One of your children are ill. You come in and, you know, there's a car problem or something like that. We had an evening last week all planned, and we were going to go out and get some things done, and Charlie and I started off, and one of his tires started coming apart on his car. And so we spent the rest of the evening dealing with that. You know, we put the spare on, and the spare's flat. And so, you know, it was just one of those evenings. And after a while, you feel like, you know, this was supposed to be my day to get this done, and it's been taken from me. And so that's what Screwtape is talking about here. He says, you zealously guard in his mind the curious assumption, my time is my own. And we're going to talk about in the subsequent paragraphs this idea that our time is our own, and that we possess our time. But anyway, I'd like to open it up for comments or questions. Or we move on with this idea. Yes, sir.
I agree with you. I probably agree with you. Kind of my opinion. Living on bar time.
Okay. Sometimes we'll sit there and watch TV, and whenever we get done with a show, we say, well, that's a half hour of our life we'll never get back.
Yeah.
Whenever you feel like something has wasted your time, then you feel like you've had an injury there, too, sometimes. Okay. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
I've realized since I've gotten older that in regards to time, it seems like it speeds up the older you get, the faster it goes. When I was younger, a year seemed like a long time. Especially if you're expecting to get something, or you get it this year, and like that year would never come.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it looks like a few days and 6 months has gone by already, you know, and I think like you said, the event that happened, and I realized my time is going by already so many years, and it seems like it speeds up.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, time legitimately, in one sense, is longer when you're younger. Because if you're 10 years old, a year is 10% of your life. At my age, you know, now then a year is 1/50th of my life, you know, 2% of my life. So in that sense, it is a lot longer. But what that means is that as you get older, you become, in one sense, a little more conscious of the value of your time. Because when you're young, you feel like you've got an eternity. When you got out of school for the summer, as a kid, you know, it's like, I've got the entire summer off now to do whatever you want. Now then, as a teacher, when I get the summer off, it's like, okay, I've got this to do this week, this to do this week. The summer seems incredibly short to try to get done the things that I'd like to do during the summer vacation, theoretically. You know, every summer I tell myself, I'm going to work in just one time to go and play golf. And in the 7 years I've been here getting the summers off, I've never yet made it out to go and play golf on there. And it seems incredible to me that out of all those summers, that's never happened. But we become conscious that time is passing faster for us, it seems like. And so it makes us guard our time even more jealously sometimes because it's in such short supply. I'm sorry?
Well, I said you pay more attention to time as you're older because you have more things to do.
Mm-hmm.
When you're younger, you don't have a concept of time.
Right.
You don't think about it. You just get to go outside and play and
eat.
And
yeah, you don't have a lot of obligations.
Right.
And so, you know,
all the responsibilities are very minimal.
You know, if you remember back, you know, whenever you were a kid, if a friend called you and said, hey, you want to come over and hang out this afternoon? Okay, I got nothing better to do. That's an inconceivable concept anymore whenever you get to be an adult of, oh, I didn't have anything planned. We always have something planned. It seems like for every minute of every day, there's this impossible list of things to get done during that day. So our time gets so much more valuable. Okay, but he says, let him have the feeling that he starts each day as the lawful possessor of 24 hours. Let him feel as a grievous tax that portion of his property which he has to make over to his employers, and as a generous donation that further portion he allows to religious duties. But what he must never be permitted to doubt is that the total from which these deductions have been made was in some mysterious sense his own personal birthright. In other words, all this is my time, and okay, I got to make a living, so I'll give my employer 8 hours, and you know, obviously God owes some of my time, so I'm going to very generously take a few hours out of my week and use them for my religious duties. But the rest of that time is mine. Nobody should infringe on
it. I think we have a particular problem with that simply because we do live in a time and a place where we have so much of what we would refer to as the leisure time. Yeah. Many people in the world, but they wake up in the morning, they're hungry. And that's the first thought is, okay, what have I got to do? So, mm-hmm. It's fairly at least partial.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's just a big, you know, we have to have that thought. We have so much that we can just walk a few feet, you know, and grab out of the cabinet, you know, and get my nourishment that we need, probably not for the next few hours, but for the entire day.
Mm-hmm.
We're just being honest about it.
Yeah, for a lot of people in the world, it's kind of like animals where the majority of the day is spent in figuring out where their next meal is coming from. That's true. We don't feel like we have a lot of leisure time, but there's a lot of our day that's not spent trying to figure out where our meal is coming from. It's not survival issues. It's the things that I want to do or I feel an obligation to do or I'd like to do this. All right. Somebody could read the next paragraph for us.
You have here a delicate task. The assumption which you want him to go on making is so absurd that if once it is questioned, even we cannot find a shred of argument in his defense. The man can either make and overtake one moment of time. It all comes to him by pure gift. He might as well regard the sun and the moon as his checkers. He is also, in theory, committed to the total service of the enemy. And if the enemy appeared to him in bodily form and demanded that total service for even one day, he would not refuse it. He would be greatly relieved if that one day involved nothing harder than listening to the conversation of a foolish woman. He would be relieved almost to the pitch of disappointment if for 1.5 hour in that day he said, now, you may go and amuse yourself. Now, if he thinks about his assumptions for a moment, even he is bound to realize that the last thing I need is to furnish him with arguments in his defense. There aren't any. Your task is purely negative. Don't let his thoughts come anywhere near. Wrap a darkness about his and in the center of that darkness, let his sense of ownership in man lie silent, uninspected, and operative.
Okay. So what he's saying is time is just another one of those things that happens around us. You know, the sun rises and the moon rises and sets, and we have nothing to do with that. You know, it would be ludicrous if somebody said, you know, hey, would you like the moon? I own the moon. It's mine. And you look at that, you know, this person needs to be put in an institution and have somebody care for them. But yet we have that idea about time, you know, that somehow time belongs to us. But as he says in here, time is a gift. It's something that we're given. It doesn't belong to us. It's not ours. It just happens. We have this period of time that we've been given as a free gift. And so now then, what remains is to see how we're going to fill that time. And he says, well, suppose God himself came down to you and said, I'd really like for this one day for you to just commit it and do some things that I need you to do. I mean, imagine the sense of honor you would feel if God came to you personally and said, there's some things I need for you to do that I need for you to do for me today. I mean, wouldn't you in a heartbeat call up your employer, I'm sorry, I can't come in today? Well, it's kind of hard to explain, but, you know, God has asked me to do something, and so you're just going to have to wait. You know, assuming that they believed you and didn't fire you on the spot, you know, that would make you feel very important. I'm sorry, but somebody else. When you're working in the military, sometimes your boss wants you to do something. Well, I'm sorry, the general asked me to do this. Oh, never mind. Go and take care of it if the general wants you to do this. It's kind of the same concept. So he says, if God himself appeared in front of you and said, I need you to do this for me today, we'd say, of course. You know, my time is your time. But yet he says, whenever we don't actually see God stand in front of us and demand our time, somehow we get this mistaken idea that the time belongs to us, that we've got a claim on our time, and that nobody has a right to infringe on our time that is ours. Yes? That's true.
Well, that was a mess, really, because I didn't want to take the time to do it.
Yeah, it wasn't always a time issue. Sometimes it was
just they just were coming to know.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes, you know, it's a little awkward, some of the things that God may ask of you to do. You know, you go up there and sacrifice your firstborn son. Although that he didn't question. You know, there are days when I wouldn't either. But anyway.
This is not a position,
right? Right, yeah. That's exactly right. But anyway, and like the deal with Jonah, you know, a lot of times you think, well, you know, those Ninevites, those are mean people, and Jonah was scared. That wasn't the case at all. Jonah freely admitted, he said, I don't want to go preach to those people. What if they repent? You know, God said, you've already said if they don't repent, I'm going to destroy them. Well, that's what they deserve. I want you to do that. I don't want to go preach to them because they might go and repent, and then you won't destroy them. And that's not what I want. And so, you know, that was Jonah's objection to it. But anyway, you know, it's kind of this strange idea that we get about time sometimes. And so he says, you know, if the person ever stops and thinks about it, they're going to realize this. So don't ever let them think about that concept. Many times when the deacon comes to us and says, could you help out with this? I'm sorry, I just don't have time. what we're really saying is that I have a lot of higher priorities in my life, and you know, you fit somehow way down here in my list of priorities. And you know, sometimes we legitimately do say I'm a little overtasked right now. You know, I'm kind of saturated at this point. But there are other times whenever it's just that's not what I'd like to be doing. Right? That would require me making a sacrifice of my time. I don't mind giving you time as long as it's not a sacrifice. And like, I don't mind donating money in church as long as it doesn't actually keep me from buying something else that I really wanted. But if I have to choose, you know, I'm going to spend it on myself, and whatever's left over, I'll put in the collection plate. We treat our time the same way. Sometimes it takes a very low priority. Sorry, go ahead, John. A sacrifice in the Bible was always the first fruits. And by the first fruits, that means when you harvest your field, before anything else happens, that's the part that you take God's 10% there, and then you have what's left. Right. Yeah, with an animal, it's okay, I don't pick out the ones I don't really particularly care for anyway. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that was the way it was considered. And I do want to draw a distinction. I had a preacher one time that laid this out very eloquently. He said our highest priority in life is God. And he said then we've got our wife, and then we've got our children, and then we have church. He drew a distinction between God and church. Because he said, you know, sometimes we can spend so much time on volunteering for everything that we do at church that our families have taken a backseat to it. And he says, you need to keep in mind that your family is very important and that it's easy to constantly rob the family of the time, justifying it on the fact of, well, I'm doing this for church. You know, so therefore, you don't have any right to question that I'm taking away all this free time that I would normally spend with the family to the point that your family ceases to function normally. And God doesn't want that either. Our families are also important to us. And so we have to strike a balance with everything else in life. We need to remember that time spent with family is also time that we're spending for God, because God intends for us to raise our children properly and spend time with our children, and to spend time with our wives, our husbands, and develop that relationship that we should have with them. So the family is not more important than God, but it can at times be more important than some church activities that we have. And I've never really thought about it in quite that way before the meeting.
How many times that you said spending time? I think that's a fascinating thing. Spending time. And it's truly a gift. And you have to think about how we spend it. Like money, some of us are very good at it, and some of us are very poor at spending money. And we have to think about it. God's very conscious of time in our lives. After all, he gave us the Sabbath day to rest. That is for man. He says, you need to rest. So he's conscious of that. And the time that he has given us to rest, we don't even do that. It goes 24/7.
Another one of those trade-offs we make. We put it in terms of morning guy and evening guy. You know, you get things done in the evening. Morning guy is going to hate me for this, you know, because I stayed up until 1 a.m. trying to get this done. Morning guy is going to be pretty upset.
What's important in their life. And I was one,
talked about spending time, and in some cases it's less spending, it's more like investing. When you use your time, you're making an investment. And the idea behind an investment is that it should pay dividends. The time we spend with family is an investment. We're building a relationship there. The time we spend with God is an investment. He expects us to spend a certain amount of time in a relationship with Him, as well as we do with our spouse and with our children and the other things. Instead of being like a big bank account we spend out of, it's more like you get an allowance every day. What are you going to do with today's allowance? If you don't get to save it up. You get to use it in some way, but it's all going to be gone at the end of the day. Any other thoughts? It has to do with our priorities. As you said, sometimes we're a lot more willing to be late for something we're doing for God than something we're doing for our employer. It's not that we shouldn't be conscientious with our employer, it's just that we should be equally conscientious with God.
I think one of the biggest fears in our time is television.
Is what?
Television. If you think how many hours a week you sit trying to figure it. And even if we're saying we're having family time, the whole family's watching TV, different rooms and so forth. That's really not family. And we don't need to really deal with that. Because that's time that we don't want to give up. That's just one of the biggest things that we've got there. Our own time and we are part of letting our feet take us.
Yeah. We just have to keep in perspective all the different things that compete for our time. TV is one, internet is one, time that we spend on Facebook is one, and all these different things are, we allocate our time to them. And things in life, we have to always remember, are neither good or bad. Things are things. And things are how they're as you use them. So there are things that are positive. Brian spends time doing the firefighter ministry on Facebook, and it's a positive thing that he does. Other people can waste hundreds of hours being on the computer, and so it's neither a good thing or a bad thing. It's a tool. It's something that we do. And everything in life is like that. The TV can be a tool. It can be something that we use to educate ourselves sometimes. It can be something that we do to relax and de-stress. It can also be an obsession with people. Anything that we enjoy has the potential to become an obsession. We discussed that in a previous chapter about letting things take over your life and become more important to you and a higher priority than God.
I guess it comes back to the term quality time.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Because it depends on, are you sitting there, everybody's looking at the box in the corner, or at our house, usually people are talking and all the time anyway, or discussing what's on, or something like that. There's differences between Charlie sitting down and playing a video game
and then we all play together and have fun as a family mm-hmm. doing something. So.
Yeah, it's the outcome and the results are what defines whether something is good or bad. Somebody can read paragraph number two.
The sense of ownership in general is always to be encouraged. The humans are always putting up claims to ownership which sound equally funny in heaven and in hell, and we must keep them doing so. Much of the modern resistance to chastity comes from the men's belief that they own their bodies, those vast and perilous estates pulsating with the energy that made the world, in which they find themselves without their consent, and from which they are ejected at the pleasure of another. It is as if a royal child whom his father has placed for love's sake in particular command of some great province under the real world, a wise counselor should come to fancy he really owns the city, the forest, and the corn, and in the same way he owns the bricks on the earthen floor.
Okay. And by the way, if there's terms that are unfamiliar to you, a lot of these have a glossary on the back page that defines some of the terms that we don't use so much anymore. So he says, you know, a lot of times we come to this idea that somehow we control or we own various aspects of our life. And he refers to what Paul talked about with our bodies. And he separates out sexual sin from other sins. But he said all the other sins happen outside the body. But he said this is something that is special. This is in a special category of sin because this is something where you're taking the body that God gave you and you're defiling it. And so he does separate those out. And he says people have a tendency to regard their body as something that they own. And I never really thought about it the way that he put it, where it's like, you know, you didn't pick your body. You didn't ask to be put in the body that you're chosen. And you didn't even get pick the time whenever you were placed into that body. You know, you were placed into it and ejected out of your mother's womb at a time whenever you had no control over and you didn't get to choose your body. So what makes you think this body is yours now? It belongs to God just like the sun and the moon and the stars and the planet and the fields and the grass. Everything is what God created. And so we have no particular right to ownership of anything in this world. It's all there by God's grace. The body that we inhabit falls into the same category. So in that sense, we don't even own it, to the extent that we can do whatever we like. And you hear this, I think probably the most common time is in dealing with the issue of abortion, where women say, I should have the right to make whatever choice I have with my own body. Forgetting that, you know, not only is this not your own body, it belongs to God, but that person inside there is their own separate, unique person. Like, even if you accept the fact you have the right to do whatever you want with your own body, you don't have the right to do whatever you want with somebody else's body. You know, you don't have the right to kill your one-year-old child because you don't want them anymore. Why would you have the right to kill your unborn child that you don't have anymore? But that's whenever you hear this term of, it's my body. And what C.S. Lewis is saying and what Screwtape is saying here is, if you stop and think about it, you don't even own that. Not only do you not own your time, you don't even own yourself. That we are owned by God, especially once we've become a Christian. And we've already given ourselves to God and said we're placing ourselves in your care and under your command, God, that we don't own ourselves anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is true. And that doesn't mean that, you know, every single waking moment is spent, you know, in, okay, what am I doing for God? But somehow that should always be in our subconscious. You know, that the things that we're doing, in what way do those contribute? to this overall plan and this overall mission. I mean, you know, when we're sleeping, okay, we're sleeping for God. You know, our bodies need rest. And when we relax, that's something that's important to our physical and mental health. You know, it's not to say that you're not allowed to do those things, but they all become part of this common plan that we have. You know, our plan is for us to make sure that we're in a saved condition and to try to help as many other people be in that saved condition. And so whenever you decide how you're spending your time, in what way is it contributing to that mission? When I talk to my cadets at school and we talk about the mission of the Air Force, we say the mission of the U.S. military is to kill people and break things. And so everything that happens in the military supports that idea. You know, if you're a pay clerk, you make sure the people get paid to kill people and break things. And if you work on an airplane, then you're making sure that airplane can fly that helps people kill people and break things. And it's all part of that mission. And everything comes together in that mission. And if what you're doing isn't contributing to that mission, then it doesn't need to happen. Then that's a function that we can stop doing and stop wasting resources on. So if you think about that in terms of God's mission, His mission is saving souls. And so what are we contributing to that mission? And if we're not contributing to that mission, then we're part of the problem. Running low on time. If somebody could read paragraphs 3 and 4.
We produce this sense of ownership not only by pride, but also by confusion. We teach them not to notice the different senses of the possessive pronoun, to find the greater differences that run from my boots through my dog, my servant, my wife, my father, my master, and my country, to my God. They can be taught to reduce all these senses to that of my boots, the my of ownership. Even in a nursery, a child can be taught to mean by my teddy bear, not the old imagined recipient of affection to whom it stands in a special relation. For that is what the enemy will teach them to mean if we are not careful. But the bear I can pull to pieces if I like. And at the other end of the scale, we have taught men to say, my God, in a sense not really very different from my boots, meaning the God on whom I have a claim for my distinguished services and whom I exploit from the pulpit, the God I have done a corner in. And all the time, the joke is that the word mine, in its fully possessive sense, cannot be uttered by a human being about anything. In the long run, either our father or the enemy will say mine of each thing that exists, and especially of each man. They will find out in the end, never fear, to whom their time, their souls, and their bodies really belong, certainly not to them, whatever happens. At present, the enemy says mine of everything on the pedantic, legalistic ground that he made it. Our father hopes in the end to say mine of all things on the more realistic and dynamic ground of conflict. Your affectionate uncle, Spoonchain.
Okay. One of the first words that children learn to utter very quickly is mine. When you put a plate of cookies out, mine. I'm claiming that. And we do that. And there are things, you know, like my boots. Nobody else wants to wear my boots, you know, after my feet have been in them. In that sense, they're mine. I can have them, I bought them, I can throw them away whenever I choose. But whenever we use that same word to refer to other things, such as my wife, my husband, my country, my God, it's easy, what he's saying, is for us to transfer that sense of ownership to this other person, or even to God in that sense, when in reality, we're using the term my not to mean that we own it. Because he says, in reality, we don't own anything. Not our bodies, not our time, or anything else. He says, there are two grounds for saying that you own something. He says, in the one sense, God created everything, and so he says, mine, because I created it. In the other sense, you can have it be yours because you took it. He says it can be a conquest type thing. This can be your kingdom today, and it can be somebody else's kingdom tomorrow because they conquered it and they took it. And so, he says, God says things are mine because he made them. Satan says things are mine because I took them. And he says, in the end, there's going to be a dividing up of souls. And he says, God's going to say mine and Satan's going to say mine on those grounds. But it's based on the choice that you make. Because you're going to pick which of those two camps you end up in. And when they say mine, it means the soul is mine because that person chose to be on my team. It's not like in the playground where the two team captains say, I want Ray, you know, I want Peggy on my team. In this case, it's, all right, these are the two team captains. You go and you stand by the team captain that you want, whose team you want to be on. And that's what people are doing in this life is they're choosing their team. I apologize for that. I forgot to turn my phone on. So, anyway. But it's mine. So I can do what I want. So, in the end, whenever you choose what team you're going to be on, remember, this is a choice you're making for eternity. Not until halfway through, whenever you say, hey, let's repick teams because this isn't going well, this is one-sided. You pick your team for eternity. So just make sure you pick the right one. You mean as far as you pick it? I don't understand your point. But. Okay. All right. Yeah. And there's a distinction. Whenever, for example, when you write software and somebody is paying you to write software, it's not your software. You wrote it. But if the company's paying you for it, it belongs to them. Our time is the same way. We may consider it our time and we're doing what we want, but we're in reality on God's time. And so the result is God's.
Well, he almost uses my in a negative term because it talks about the child pulling the bear apart and you said something about discarding the boots when they're done. And I was thinking in the last part of the paragraph Mark 2 where he talks about the king thinking he owns things. At the time this was written, I was kind of thinking of Stalin because he even went so far as to try to reverse the course of the rivers because it was his country. He could do whatever he wanted to with it and ruined a lot of things in the process. And so, I don't know, I'm kind of getting a feeling here that if we are... If we do say something is ours, we're a lot of times not the best stewards of it. And you use the example of my wife. Mm-hmm. Men will sometimes use that as an excuse to do anything they want to. Mm-hmm. If there's a domestic excuse, that's my wife, I can do whatever I want.
That's right. Harkens back to the days when wives were property.
Mm-hmm. And so it almost sounds like when we call something mine, that we're not always the best, we're not always treated the way we should. I mean,
careful how, not how we use the word necessarily, but what we think of the word when we're saying it. And especially when we say, my God. It's not my God and that I can define him however I want him to. You hear people say, well, the God I worship wouldn't send people to hell for an eternity. You know, you can think that all you want, but God is who he is. And our definition of him does not change who God is. Who he is a constant. And he will be the supreme being that he chooses to be, whether we choose to accept it or not. We don't have the right to question God's wisdom, because it's a lot wiser than our wisdom.
Oh yeah. Maybe your child wouldn't, but person did.
Well, right, true.
Well, use the word fine, like that. There's another sense that goes along with it.